And welcome to another edition of the Lunch Special here on KZSU. And today, honored to have professor from the School of Humanities and Sciences, if that wasn't enough, Department of Political Science, Classics, and Philosophy, Josh Ober. Josh, welcome to KZSU.
Great to be here. Thanks so much, Bird.
And apparently this is not your first time. You've been on with the esteemed philosophy professor Robert Harrison on his show, right?
Absolutely. It was a terrific experience.
That's great. He does a great show. We're really all real proud of his work here at KZSU. And today you brought a real wide selection in different styles of music, and it's basically coming just from your love of music. Why the Sonny Boy Williamson number 2 to start the show off?
Well, I wanted to found the set. It's the blues, of course, are the beginning, really, for just about everything that happens in American pop music ever after. I only learned about that in 1969 when I was lucky enough to make friends with an exchange student from Finland who was living with my family for a little bit. I was listening to the stuff that, you know, anybody was about then, and this guy told me, no, actually, if I wanted to understand anything about rock and roll or any of the pop music I was listening to, I actually had to, you know, get back to the roots and start listening to Sonny Boy and Howlin' Wolf and the rest of the blues masters. And I guess I believed him.
Wow. And what kind of effect did that have on you?
Oh, it was transformative in that, you know, I continue to love pop music. Most of what I'm going to play is, you know, one way and another, much after the Sonny Boy Williamson era. But it actually, you know, allowed me to listen to music differently. I mean, I actually could hear things in whatever it was going to be, you know, whether I was listening to the Rolling Stones or whoever it was. I couldn't suddenly, you know, understand that, you know, they hadn't just come out of nowhere, you know, sometime around 1965, that they were actually really scholars of the music they were playing and that they were grounding themselves all in this, you know, spectacular folk tradition, very American and, of course, all African American.
So it sounds like the blues changed your life.
Absolutely. Should change everyone's.
That's very interesting. What do you got up next for the folks?
This is going to be Lucinda Williams. This was a song that I almost ran my car off the road and living in Montana at the time, listening to a public radio. They were doing an interview with someone I'd never heard of. No one had ever heard of her really at that point. Put this song on, and I thought, you know, I just died and went to heaven. So...
Lucinda Williams right here on the Lunch Special, and here with Josh Ober, professor of, I'll just use a different one every time, professor of political science.
That's a good way, place to start.
Yeah, there you go. And we'll get into some of your roles here at Stanford at the bottom of the hour. But how did Lucinda Williams change your life?
Well, as I was saying, I just about ran my car off the edge of the road when I first heard her. I just thought that sort of the purity of the voice, once again, the connection to the history of music, because of course Lucinda Williams is from Louisiana, and she was really aware of that kind of deep blues background. She connected that with poetry. Her father was a poet, and she learned a lot clearly, and the combination was just, I thought, amazing. She made a series of just stunning albums.
And how many times have you seen her?
I've just seen her a couple of times in concert. First time was in Bozeman, Montana, in a little club. It was one of the best concerts I've ever seen. I think she's actually probably best, you know, just playing in a small club, basically a bar scene, which is a lot of people sort of hanging out, drinking, talking. I think that really is, you know, where her music is most at home, and I think where she's happiest playing.
How was she received in Bozeman, Montana?
Oh, man, people were in awe.
Really?
Now,
back then, was she playing by herself, or did she have a band?
She had a small, I think it was a pickup, a backup band. It wasn't, she was just traveling by herself, and it was local musicians who were backing her up.
Interesting. Lucinda Williams. Well, Josh Ober, what do we have next for the folks?
So this is ska. This is the Scatolites. They were terrific in the 70s and 80s. This is a song and a whole series of songs that made it possible for me to write my second book. I had these blasting in my ear phones throughout writing a book on the philosophy of criticism of democracy.
Wow. Some reggae music for your, some ska music for your, and what do we know about the difference between reggae and ska?
Well, I mean, reggae and ska, I think, were fairly, they sort of came out of the same core roots. One of the things that was really key about ska is that the founders of ska were very keen on what they called sort of the two-tone world. It was meant to be a black-white synergy. They were very self-consciously trying to break beyond the kind of race barriers that were typical, especially in England. A lot of the ska was developed in Britain and in an attempt to get beyond the racism of the British lower class environment that many of these guys came up from.
Yeah, it blew up in England, didn't it?
It did, yeah, absolutely.
And it's actually still going. There's a big scene
there,
yeah. Right?
Yeah. In fact, the Scatolites are still playing. It's different, almost all different guys, but it's actually...
Really?
Yeah, the group survives, as several of the great ska groups do.
What do we have up next, Josh?
Okay, so this one's going to be just a little change of pace. This was from album that came out in 1968. I became completely obsessed with this, as did one other friend. We actually got to hear this guy, and it was just one of those things that you think, I saw him in concert, one of those things that you think, you know, you're never going to see anything like this again in your life, and it was true. I never
did.
I am
the God of hellfire, and I bring you fire. See you.
Music from 1969, right?
That's right, yep.
And Josh Ober, Professor Ober, tell us, you saw Arthur Brown do his act, right?
Yeah. It was just absolutely amazing.
We were talking about it off mic. Describe that show, because you said I wasn't aware of some of the stuff this guy would do.
Oh, man. I mean, he would have this, must have been one of the really early dramatic stage shows, had all kinds of props, the most remarkable of which was this crown that partway through the show, before he plays that great fire song, he brings out this big can of gasoline, and you think, I can't believe, what's he going to do with that? And he douses this crown, which is something that catches the gasoline, lights it on fire, and he's dancing around in the stage singing that song with this flaming crown of fire. I mean, you're just unbelievable.
Well, didn't touch his hair.
Well,
didn't catch
apparently
his hair on fire.
I read later that there were a couple of accidents. there weren't this time, but apparently there were fairly close calls. It wasn't a perfectly controlled technology.
Wild. And I remember the album, too. The album came out, The Crazy World of Arthur Brown.
Crazy World of Arthur Brown, exactly.
And then, I don't think he ever did another one after
basically
that, did
nothing
he?
Else. I mean, there might have been some follow-up, but it never went anywhere. This was it. He was just, had this one tremendous creative album in him, I guess.
Here with Professor Josh Ober, professor from the School of Humanities and Sciences, Department of Political Science, Classics, and Philosophy. We're going to find out more about all that stuff, but we're going to play some more music now. Josh, what do you got queued up for the folks now?
This one is a song that I just loved back in 1964. It's a group called The Zombies, once again. They didn't go a whole long distance after their breakthrough album, but this is a song called She's Not There.
Well, no one told me about her, the way she lied. Well, no one told me about her, how many people cried. But it's too late to say you're sorry. How would I know? Why should I care? Please don't bother trying to find her. She's not there. Well, let me tell you about the way she looked. The way she acted, the color of her hair. Her voice was soft and cool, her eyes were clear and bright. But she's not there. Well, no one told me about her. What could I do? Well, no one told me about her. They all knew, but it's too late to say you're sorry. How would I know? Why should I care? Please don't bother trying to find her. She's not there. Well, let me tell you about the way she looked, the way she acted, the color of her hair. Her voice was soft and cool, her eyes were clear and bright, but she's not there. Don't bother trying to find her. She's not there. Well, let me tell you about the way she looked, the way she acted, the color of her hair. Her voice was soft and cool, her eyes were clear and bright, but she's not there.
The Zombies.
Yeah, they were. They were another one of these groups that, you know, had a couple of great songs. There was one called what was it? Time of the Season, that was pretty good, but you know, it was not a lot, you know, beyond that. But this one just stood out for me. You know, there was so much just crap on the radio when I first started listening to music a lot in the mid '60s. But this every now and again, you'd hear a song that, you know, somehow had something different, something evocative, and this one certainly did for me.
Yeah, it's funny thinking back, because we're about the same age, and thinking back on radio back then, they really did homogenize it. And it, I mean, well, it's worse now, but around here in non-commercial radio land, we don't say commercial radio sucks. We say it sucks your brains.
Yeah, yeah. No, and this was, so you really had to struggle to try to find something out of that kind of absolutely standardized stuff. And the, you know, I just remember that attempt to try to find something that was a little bit different, a little bit out there. So,
do you still do that today?
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's hard to find. I don't like really depend a lot on now my goddaughter, who's 18, is my she tells me what to listen to, but doesn't stick in my mind quite. So she'll send me tracks, and so I think, oh, that's great. What was that? What was that? And then it's all gone.
Hard to keep up with.
Hard to keep up with. It really is.
And now they get it all online.
But she's totally into indie music, right? So she's, you know, there is this sort of world for her anyway, that is attempting to, you know, get beyond just the homogenization. She's, you know, desperately struggling to try to find something that has some freshness, something something that really connects to her, that isn't just simply you know, put in the blender and churned out.
Professor Josh Ober is the guest today. And why don't we just get into it right now? Professor from the School of Humanities and Sciences. Then you're also involved in the Department of Political Science, the Department of Classics, and the Department of Philosophy. You were born in Brunswick, Maine. You went to the University of Minnesota for your undergraduate. You got your PhD in history from the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor. And it must have been an interesting time when you were in college, huh?
Yeah, it really was. You know, I started college in 1971. I'd already been pretty active in anti-war things when I was in high school, but in college it really ramped up. This was, of course, the sort of height of the Vietnam War. Kent State had just happened. Of course, we're coming up on the anniversary.
Tomorrow.
The
40th
anniversary. So, yeah, that was as I was sort of basically just finishing out high school, that had happened.
How did that affect you when it did? Just thinking that tomorrow's the 40th anniversary. Do you remember?
It was really terrifying, because it actually began to feel like an actual war.
At home,
yeah, a civil war. I mean, there had been, of course, you know, a lot of violence on the part of protesters, but the idea that the government would actually be willing to use military force and deadly force against citizens was something that, you know, we really hadn't contemplated. And for a while there, it just looked as if it was just going to be the end of the world.
And that was before you got to college. So when you got into college, the mood must have been
it was very tough. Yeah, there was there were a lot of demonstrations. You know, a lot of tear gas. The campuses were getting shut down periodically. At this point, the police really didn't know how to control large crowds, and so they were, you know, they were scared. Sympathize with them in many ways, because they didn't know how to control this mass movement that was coming out. And of course, then the only way they had it was to overreact. It was a remarkable time. Exciting, thrilling, some great music, but was this real undertow of concern. I mean, it looked as if the society was just coming apart.
Mm-hmm. And even though the problems of today are much bigger than they were back then,
Oh, in many ways, that's absolutely right. I mean, now the problems are global.
Right. Right.
You know, we sort of thought if we got out of Vietnam, we could return to utopia.
But it's so funny because you don't feel that same angst.
No.
Not just us. It just seems like, you know, when you look out into the, well, like with your students, do you feel that angst?
Well, I suppose being a student and teaching them is two very different things. Not as much. And I think part of it is that the war was, at that point, very much part of our lives, especially because of the draft.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody knew people who were serving. Everybody knew people who were killed.
On TV every night.
And of course, at that point, you know, the military hadn't figured out how to do the sort of embedded deal and control the media, and so you were watching the real war really happen. Mm-hmm. Once again, it was just absolutely dazzling.
It was. It really was. Firefights and all of it. Yeah. You've written 10 books, and we spoke about that a little bit off air. One on war.
Yeah, I really started my career as a military historian. My PhD thesis, dissertation, was on ancient history, on the impact of the loss of the Peloponnesian War on the city-state of Athens. And I remained very interested in this. I wrote with a friend of mine, Barry Strauss, a book that was called The Anatomy of Error, which was about great military disasters of the ancient world, big wars in which military leaders took big armies with great confidence into foreign territory and had really awful outcomes. This was very much a post-Vietnam book, I guess.
Did Napoleon play a part in your book at all?
No, these were all from antiquity. These were decided. These were all from the Greeks and Romans, basically. That was our expertise. So we looked at the Peloponnesian War, Hannibal, some of the wars of the Roman Republic, the last of the pagan emperors, Julian, who decided it would be a good idea to invade Iraq and found himself in deep difficulties.
Isn't that interesting?
Isn't that interesting?
Barry there. Yeah, they had to leave, but they couldn't. Who's that sound like? Here with Josh Ober, professor of a whole lot of stuff, including School of Humanities and Sciences, Political Science, Classics, and Philosophy. What role do you play in over at the Political Science Department?
Well, I specialize in political theory. That is, I look at the writings of philosophical authors who are concerned with problems of justice, problems of legitimacy. So I specialize in classical theory. A lot of my work has been on Thucydides, Plato, Aristotle, who were struggling all with a lot of the problems that we still struggle with in terms of trying to create some kind of form of legitimate political organization.
Yeah, it seems that we're having a real problem with that, huh?
Well, it's you know, the whole question of how to limit the powers of central government, how citizens can be involved, how a society can both generate wealth but also keep attached to core values. These are, you know, really perennial questions, and it's worth attending to the fact that, you know, this isn't the first time that we've struggled with these kinds of problems. I think there's, you know, a lot you can actually learn about the ways that people thought about this in the past.
One thing I enjoy about having the professors in here on Monday is I get to have you here and pick your brain. And here's a good question that I think you're qualified to answer. Do we live in a democracy?
Well, you know, if you were to ask an ancient Athenian that, they probably would say no. And after all, they made up the word. They'd say no because for them, democracy meant that the citizens had to be actively participating in the democracy.
Mm-hmm.
That is, citizens had to be actively engaged in not only voting, but talking out in the citizen assemblies, spending a certain amount of time actually working the machine of their own government. So I think what the Athenians would say is that we've delegated a democracy, or delegated the actual workings of democracy, and that ultimately that means that we don't have a democracy as they understood it.
And that's what the Athenians would say. What would you say?
Well, you know, I think that what we have is an awful lot better than an awful lot of alternatives. So for me, I think that we need to, as citizens of a kind of government I think that can fairly be described as a kind of democracy, have to use what democracy gives to citizens, and that is a right of protest, a right of criticism, a right of free speech, and we have to use it, I think, actively. If we don't do that, if we're not actually using our democratic freedoms, then they won't be preserved. But I think it's better to live in a society that has those freedoms than a society that doesn't.
Josh Ober, the guest for the hour, Professor Josh Ober, from the School of Political Science, Classics, Philosophy, and Humanities and Science. Let's, before we talk too much, let's play some more music. You brought some great stuff. What do you got up next for the folks?
Well, this sort of continues 1964. So we listened to the Zombies. This is a cover of a 1964 song called A Night Has a Thousand Eyes. Originally, it was Bobby V. But I think this updated version by Anita Kelsey is a lot better.
Cool.
Say
I've been reminded by my producer that there was a chair. You're the chair of, and can Josh, you go ahead and pronounce it because I tried to read it off the website.
I hold what is the Konstantin Mitsotakis Chair in the Political Science Department.
Explain that.
So Konstantin Mitsotakis was a former prime minister of Greece, and the chair is named in his honor by Eleni Tsakopoulos and Marcos Kounoulakis, who are actually currently living in Hungary because Eleni is now the ambassador, U.S. ambassador to Hungary. They're terrific people, business people here in the Bay Area who have passion for democracy, passion for politics, and passion for Greek culture. And they set up this chair. That's what really made it possible for me to come to Stanford.
No. Now, how long have you been here at Stanford?
This is my fourth year. I was at Princeton University for 16 years before that. So it's wonderful to be here.
A little bit of a change, huh?
It is. Well,
Snow in the wintertime?
No snow in the wintertime. And, you know, Princeton's a wonderful place, but they don't ask professors to be DJs.
There you go. They don't have a show like ours?
Not that I ever discovered.
Oh, shucks.
Or at least ever discovered me.
Well, we're proud to have you and honored, too. And I'm amazed at these 10 books you've written, too. This is pretty amazing stuff. Again, before we talk too much, let's get some more music on, because you brought so much great music. Who do we got up next?
This is the Cowboy Junkies from the Trinity Session. This is, once again, just one of those songs that captured me when I first heard it. So here it is.
Thank you.
a great cover of that song here with Josh Ober today. Josh, you got a wide range and taste of music.
Well, I suppose, excuse me. Mile wide and an inch deep.
That's okay, though, you know.
Well, absolutely. And these, all of them are meant to, you know, ultimately go back in some way to that, you know, great blues period. Once again, you know, Sonny Boy Williamson is meant to found the whole thing.
My producer's going to think I put you up to that.
Not at all.
She won't allow me to talk about my my other show here.
Yeah.
And no, I shouldn't, because on Mondays I do a whole different thing. But,
I owe this all to, you know, Eero Hamäniemi.
Was that his name?
He was
the Finnish exchange student.
Yeah. He taught me.
Did you ever hear from him again?
I did. In fact, we've been in touch by email. He is actually a pretty noted composer of classical music now.
Really? And, is he still into the blues?
He is, very much so, and also very much into the music of South India.
Wow.
So, yeah, he's an amazing guy.
Interesting. Music is a trip. Have you found music today that hits you the same way as that stuff did when you were younger? Even though you're an older person, you're older, you're different person, look from a different perspective, but has music affected you that some music, any music affected you that way?
I find it sort of hard to make the kind of deep connection to contemporary music. Maybe it's just that a fact of being older. As I mentioned, you know, my beloved goddaughter is trying to educate me on some of the indie scene, and I must say some of that is terrific. Part of it that I've been doing recently, just going back to the roots, listening to a lot of blues, a lot of bebop jazz.
Wow.
So
amazing how that music still fresh, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, they were doing a lot.
They sure were. And are you aware of this soul scene that's been blowing up all over America?
So tell me about it.
You got Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings came not first, but these are record collectors.
Yeah.
And they know what the old records sound like, what they should sound like, so they're putting bands together.
Oh, that's
they're finding singers. I just heard about a brand new one. Well, they're not brand new, but I heard brand new for me over the weekend. A band that came out of Milwaukee, started by a guy who ran a record store, and he found a singer, and they make the band sound like old 45s.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I know, it's amazing. Yeah. And they had them playing on NPR, and it had that old sound to it.
Yeah. Well, there was something about, you know, the 45 sound. I mean, that's what I
did. You have them when you were younger?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it was amazing. And the little scritches, you know, that would get into them would become part of it.
That's right. Scratchy 45s.
Yeah,
they sound better that way.
I do.
Professor Josh Ober, the guest. What do we got, Josh?
So the next thing up is a 1969. This is Stevie Winwood, a group that existed just for a short time called Blind Faith.
Yeah, great band.
crazy. I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so blue. I knew you'd love me as long as you wanted, and then someday you'd leave me for somebody new. Worry, why do I? Thinking that my love could hold you. I'm crazy for trying and crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving you.
Beautiful stuff for a Monday afternoon. Josh, you should be a DJ.
Well, thank you very much, but damn, you can't, dude, go wrong with Patsy Cline.
That's right. Well, if you ever want to come down and take training, man, we'll get you on the air.
Hey, thanks.
Or just come back and do this show again.
Well, I would love to.
That was wonderful. If folks want to get hold of you about your work, your music selections, any of that stuff, how could they do that?
Probably the easiest thing is just to drop me an email. I'm just JOBER@Stanford, and I'd love to hear from you.
Okay. And what are we going to go out with?
This is, we're going way back, 1962. This is a song, all instrumental, called Telstar. And it seems to me to just sort of express a little bit of a hope for the future.
Thank you very much.